Please listen now with open ears as Sam Andreatis comes and leads us in the scriptures.
Thank you. Thank you, Darren. It's great, always great to be visiting, seeing what the Lord is doing with Ironworks, seeing over time how he is developing you and what he's been doing through Darren's ministry and your other folks who are ministering here. I'm very happy to be here. I want to talk to you about a serious subject this morning. How many of you it was just a few months ago, caught the interview with Diane Sawyer of Bruce Jenner on the way to becoming Caitlyn Jenner? Anybody catch that? Anybody see that interview? It's a few months ago. Maybe a few. Well, how many of you are familiar with the Supreme Court decision that was also made a few months ago, legalizing same-sex marriage? Anybody familiar with that? Okay, a few more hands go. How many are familiar with the awards that have been being given now? I think it's the Actors Guild Award that have been given to a TV show called Transparent. I think Best Actor or Best Show. Anybody kind of caught that buzz going on? All right, so this is a subject that I want to be talking to you about this morning because it's all around us and I think in our midst as well. And I'll start out by saying, you know, in every generation, in every time, in every place, there are people whose job it is to break the rules. People who aren't happy with the status quo and they want to push the envelope, they want to color outside the lines. And I have a name for these people. They're called artists. And this is what their purpose in life is. This is what they do. And it kind of enlivens you. It makes you feel alive to color outside of lines, right? To break the status quo. It's kind of invigorating at times, you know? And if you're one of these people that likes to do that, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you. I think you've been given an important purpose on earth. And very glad that God gives us these people who want to push the envelope, color outside the lines. But the question I want to ask this morning is, are there lines that we should not color outside of? Are there rules that if we break will subtract from our humanity? They won't enhance our humanity. They won't make us more human. They'll actually make us less human. And the scripture that we're about to read, 1 Corinthians 11, says that there are. So let's read that together. And I'm just, it's a short passage. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 11. It's from Paul's first letter to Corinth, first century Roman Corinth, a city that was formed. And this is what he says in verses 11 through 13. Nevertheless, in the Lord, woman is not independent of man, nor man of woman. For as woman was made from man, so man is now born of woman. And all things are from God. Judge for yourselves, is it proper for a wife to pray to God with her head uncovered? And this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. All right, so we're going to see that this passage addresses this cultural issue that is all around us now, and this cultural movement called transgenderism. And it helps us to understand, and it's something that we need to understand. It's something that we need to talk about. You might come to church and you think, why are we talking about this in church? You know, this isn't the kind of thing you want to talk about in church. I want to argue with you this morning and say that it is. But to do that, let's get some terms straight. So the first thing I want to do is just define some terms. Just get some terminology, because maybe a lot of you are up on this. Probably some of you are not. So if you are up on it and you think, why do we have to go through these terms? Just have mercy on the rest of us. The first term is transvestite. Now, if you like getting dressed up and enjoy getting dressed up in the opposite gender clothing, the clothing of the opposite sex, then you're called a transvestite, okay? First term. If you like to celebrate that and broadcast that in a very loud way, then you're called a drag queen, okay? Drag queen, transvestite. If you want to go a step further than that, and you want to undergo hormone treatment and have some reconstructive surgery on your face, or have breast removal if you're a woman, or breast implants if you're a guy, and actually modify through surgery your genitalia in different ways by procedures that are now widely available and can be very convincing, then you're called a transsexual person. Okay? And if you're a transsexual person, that's something that you have decided to do to live as the sex opposite your chromosomes. Okay? You might be chromosomally a woman, but you want to be a man. You want to act like a man, or vice versa. Okay? Now, homosexual folks are not always transsexual or transvestite, but you will find plenty of transvestites and transsexuals who are homosexual. But they're not exactly the same thing. And the trend today is to lump these two different categories together in the term transgendered. So that's what transgendered is. And this is something that we've got to understand and deal with. Because if you feel like there's something wrong with this, if you feel like this shows that there's a problem, instead of when people do this, you want to celebrate it. If you feel like there's something that you think is wrong about this, or it shows that there's a problem, then there's a name for you too. And you're called transphobic. Okay? And you have that category, even though, actually, in fact, dear friends, there is not any real scientific evidence, there's no real hard evidence that undergoing sex change operations actually improves the lives of the people undergoing them. In fact, usually it's the case, you won't get this on television, you won't see this story, but it's usually the case that after people do these things to their bodies, they're still left with this inner alienation problem that led to their decisions in the first place. And it's very sad. And so what you find is that folks who undergo this, people who are transsexual, have sex reassignment therapy, or transvestites, these transgendered people actually have a much higher suicide rate than the general population. General population suicide rate is about 5%. But among transgendered people, it's 41%. So if you think that this is not something we should talk about, I got to disagree with you. I beg to differ, because we, folks, as the people of Christ, are going to be picking up the pieces in the lives of people who are making these decisions. We're gonna have the pieces to pick up in their lives. Because this is not going to decrease, friends. This is just going to increase. This issue. Maybe some of you have friends or loved ones already who you've encountered who are transgendered people. If you don't now, you will. Maybe even someone here is a transgendered person. I would not be surprised as well. Because just reference to the Supreme Court decision. Friends, as I'm going to try to talk to you about today, as soon as you take gender away from relationships, you lose gender. You start to lose gender, as we're going to see. So we have to be understanding about this, and I guess there's one more term I'm going to define with us this morning. And that is the term, maybe the most important one, gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria, you might have heard of that term. Okay? And that is the feeling, the condition, that you are trapped in the wrong body. That your chromosomes might say that you're a guy, but really, you feel like you never fit in, that you're really a woman, deep down, internally. Or, the other way around, that you were born a woman, but you really feel like you should be a guy. Now, gender dysphoria is not something we should demean or poo-poo and say it doesn't, because it's very real. And it's only going to increase. Because, as I say, when you lose gender in relationship, you start to lose gender. And it's something that people feel, it's widespread. In fact, I would say, for those of you who still don't think we should be talking about this, I'll make the bold argument with you, bold claim today, that gender dysphoria is not just something that we find among transgendered people, not just among those who have had their body modified sex reassignment. It's not. But I would say that gender dysphoria is something experienced by you, and by you, and by you, and by me. I think it's all over us, because I would argue with you that's impossible to exist in our culture now without at least a mild case of gender dysphoria. And I'll prove it to you with one simple question. Let me ask you a question. I'd like a show of hands of women here. Let's ask the women. How many of you women wake up in the morning and rejoice and rejoice and celebrate and are so happy that you're a woman? Okay, let's have a show of hands. You just want to celebrate it. You're so glad you're a woman. Well, maybe one, maybe two. Okay. Thank you. Praise God if you can raise your hand. Maybe you are not affected by gender dysphoria. All right, let me ask you guys. How many of you men wake up in the morning singing that you're a man, that you're so glad that you're a man, instead of feeling vaguely guilty about it or that you're not really sure what it means to be a man? How many men can really celebrate? Maybe John, maybe one, two, there. Maybe. God bless you if that's the case. You wake up and you say, I'm glad I'm a man. But notice how few hands went up, friends. Notice how few there are. The hands went up. You know why? Because we have gender dysphoria. We all have gender dysphoria. We're not confident. We don't know what it is to be a man or what it is to be a woman. We have this vague sense of, I don't know if I, you're not quite fitting in your skin. But what I want to say to you this morning is I thank you for bringing that out about it being a gift, that would be normal. What we have to understand, first of all, is that would be normal. For you to wake up in the morning and say, I am so glad I'm a woman. There's not anything better to be woman made in the image of God. Or to wake up in the morning and say, I am so happy that I'm a man. The image of God. To sing, that would be normal. But it's not what's happening in our lives right now, is it? It's not happening because we are not getting that this is a gift. That gender is a gift to us from God. And that's the first thing that we have to understand from it. God would save us from a lifetime of coloring outside the wrong lines. Because he knows what really enlivens us. He knows what quickens us. And he also knows what subtracts from our humanity. What makes us less human. And he would save us from breaking the wrong kind of rules. Because if you color outside these lines, you will sink into your own aloneness. And that's what's going on. And to understand this, we're going to look at these three verses that we just read. Let's look first at verse 13. We're just going to look at each of the verses and bring it out. So I'm going to start at the last verse. Verse 13, where Paul says, judge for yourselves, is it proper for a wife to pray to God with her head uncovered? Okay, now I know when you read this, and this is the beginning of a whole passage you could read about head covering. Is it proper for a woman in first century Corinth to come into church and pray and prophesy with her head uncovered? And you might read that and think, who cares? Who cares about these clothing issues? I mean, really, especially here at Ironworks Church, because this is a cool church, right? I tell you, we walked in here this morning, and my whole family was just so taken with the beauty, just the aesthetic beauty and the design of your church. It's so cool, right? So I know you're a cool church, right? And you're not one of these fuddy-duddy churches where, people feel like they have to get dressed in a suit to come to church. You're not like that. You're way beyond that. I understand that, right? So especially at Ironworks, you might read this and you say, what does this have to do with anything? Why would we know what really matters when you come to worship God? It's your heart. It's not what you're dressed as or what you're wearing. So who cares what you're wearing? Well, apparently God does, but probably not because of the reason that you think. The reason why God cares about this is because he delights in gender expression. And clothing is always a symbol of our gender. Clothing is always, in any time, in any place, in any culture, clothing expresses gender distinction. That's always true. Now, it changes through time, but it always is there, and you know it. You do. That's why unisex clothing stores will never catch on. That's why if somebody comes to you and says, hey, I've got this great new idea with all this gender minimization and having coming, I'm gonna start a gender neutral clothing store, unisex clothing. Will you invest? Hold on to your wallet. Put it away. Go in the other direction because they never work. They always fail. And whenever anybody kind of comes forth with the idea, it never catches on. You look at Star Trek, The Next Generation, unisex clothing. That doesn't work, right? It always happens. Always. Why? Because clothing is always a symbol of our gender. That's what it is. Now, it may be different in different times, different places, but you know if you live in a certain place, you can get it. Right now, it might be different here in Phoenixville than it is in southern Lancaster County, where I'm coming from, or it might be different in New York City, but there is a line. And you get to pick, you can know it. Maybe tourists don't get it, but you get it. You know how women dress in Phoenixville, and you know it as the line gets crossed. Because it's always there. And the Bible understands that. You know, the genius about the Bible is that it understands that clothing expresses gender, but it changes from the culture to culture. And so the Bible never says pants are for men, you know, dresses are for women, because, you know, that's not going to fly in Shanghai, right? If you look at the Old Testament counterpart to this passage, you could say Deuteronomy 22:5 says, a man should not wear women's clothing in the covenant community, and a woman should not wear what pertains to a man. Okay, very well put. Doesn't say what the clothing is, but it assumes that you're going to know. And that's the way the Bible talks about this. It says that there's a purposeful distinction that God feels very passionate about making. But it's going to be different. Whatever your moving target is, which is your culture, use it to express gender. So you know what's happening in this verse, in this passage, is that we're dealing with first century Corinth. And in the Roman Empire in the first century, there was a custom. And that was women had some material in the back of their dress when they went out. And then when they went out, they put the material over their head. It's kind of like a hoodie, right? And so they would wear a hoodie. And you could see this in statues, that when women went out in public and they were married, they would, you know, put on their hoodie. And that was a custom throughout the Roman Empire. That was what generally people did. Well, here's what happened. In first century Corinth, they started to buck that trend because Corinth was made of new money. You know, it was an ancient colony, a Greek colony, but then it got reconstituted as a Roman colony in the first century, and they were doing very well, and it was made of new money. So you had the nouveau rich that made the community of Corinth. And apparently what happened then, it happens all the time with rich people. You know, when somebody's rich, they feel like they can buck social conventions, right? Why? Because they have money, right? So if Warren Buffett just says, I'm gonna conduct my marriage differently than is the social norm, I can do that. Why? Because I have money, you know? Or if they're having a debate that I'm invited to and I don't like what's going on in the debate, I can just not show up. What? Why? Because I have money. Well, first century Corinth was no different. You had people who had money. They were all different strata in the Corinthian church. But you had these women coming into new money, and they were saying, you know what? I'm going out of the house. I don't have to put on my hoodie. I don't have to wear a head covering when I'm in public to show that I'm married, because that's a custom, sort of like a wedding ring. You know, I don't have to do that. Sorry. Got my wedding ring. Yeah, just preach like this. Sorry, darling. Didn't mean to do that. But that's what's happening in Corinth. Women said, I'm going out in public, the rich women. I don't have to put on my hoodie. Why? Because I have money. And now that became an issue in the Corinthian church, because you had all the social strata in the Corinthian church, and the women there were saying, well, if this is the trend now to not wear our head coverings in public, should we buck that trend? Because we're bucking a lot of other trends, friends, just to have women praying and prophesying in public. Wow, that was bucking a trend. In their ecclesia, to have women actually be speaking, that was amazing. Paul had told them to do that. This is what you have. You have women praying and prophesying in your service. So that's what they're doing. They say, well, should we buck this trend also? And Paul says, no. Paul says, do not stop wearing the head covering. Don't buck that clothing trend. Why? Because it's expressing gender. And that's something that God cares about. How you express that, how you bring your gender into worship. So you see, he's telling them not to buck the trend. So all of these passages, like Deuteronomy 22 or this one, 1 Corinthians 11, is really teaching us one thing. Believe in the reality of gender. Believe that it really is there. It's a moral issue. And that's what our culture is losing. And that is why this sermon is entitled The Tragedy of Transgenderism. Because what's really going on is people are starting to not believe in gender, that it's really there anymore, that it's really a gift from God. Because there are a lot of paradoxes about gender. It's not an easy thing to define. And so people are starting to say, no, I don't really believe it. And that's why this is a great tragedy. And, you know, you can feel the tragedy. If you watch these interviews that you'll see on TV where transgendered people are sitting there and saying, I never felt like I fit in as a man. Your heart goes out to them, does it not? When you're listening to these people and they're saying, oh, man, I never really felt like I fit in. If you listen to that interview with Diane Sawyer and Bruce Jenner before he's about to become Caitlyn Jenner, that's what he says. He says, man, I never really felt like I was a guy. I was always different from the other guys. And Diane Sawyer says to him, well, how do you know that? You really should be a woman. And you know what Bruce Jenner's answer was? You know. You just know. And Diane Sawyer then drops it and goes on to another subject, and she does not ask the one question that she should ask. You know, there is one question in all these interviews that you will never hear asked. But it's the one question that needs to be asked. It's the one question that needs to be answered. It's the elephant in the room, in a way. But you're not going to hear it asked. And that question is this. What is a man, Bruce? What's the meaning of woman, Caitlin? Because until you can tell me that, until you can tell me what actually is a man, what makes a man, then how does it make any sense at all to say you don't feel like one? But that question doesn't get asked. You know why it doesn't get asked? Let me let you in on the secret. Because they don't know. They don't know. Da man doesn't know what gender is. Because you can't know without verse 11. Let's look at verse 11. Woman is not independent of man, says Paul, nor is man is not independent of woman. Now, you know, the translators, they do a good job trying to translate this very profound statement that the apostle is making. But literally, what he's saying in Greek, ugune choris andros, what he's literally saying is, woman is not without man. And man is not without woman. In other words, our genders are actually defined in terms of the other gender. That gender is something that matters in relationship. That's what he's saying. It's very deep. Very deep. So what does that mean for us? That means a lot, friends. That means the Bible can help us out of our gender dysphoria because it defines gender in different ways than we tend to. When the Bible talks about gender, it's not what we usually think of. This is what a man is, or this is what a woman is. And yet this is what holds us and brings us back to realizing it's a gift. So I'm going to simplify it for you and tell you what the Bible tells us. The Bible, I'm going to just tell you right off what the Bible tells you a man is. Okay, you want to know? Interested? What is a man according to the scriptures? Well, let me tell you first what a man not is not, okay? What a man not is. Am I saying that right? No. What a man is not. How about that? Okay, what a man is not. A man, according to the scriptures, is not someone who feels like he fits in with other men. A man is not someone who's good at sports. A man who's not someone who likes football or who is aggressive. It's not being taller, being stronger, having a lot of money, having a lot of girlfriends, or not knowing how to cook. You want to know what a man is? A real man, according to the scriptures? A real man is someone who can lay down his life for the close women in his life, who can cheerfully and consistently take charge for her, determine what your mission is together, and secure her. That's what a real man is. And young men who are here today, you can do that. You can learn how to do that. You can. And in so doing, you find out what it really is to be a man. You feel a fresh wind blowing in here? That's what I get when I read the Bible. Dispels my gender dysphoria. Now, women, you want to know what a true woman is according to the scriptures? All right, let me tell you what a true woman is not. A true woman is not someone who necessarily feels like she fits in with other women. It's not someone who is good at cleaning, someone who is sensitive, or someone who loves to shop. Right? Although you could. And that would be okay. But that is not wherein your womanhood consists. Okay? It's not someone who's weak, someone who's knitting all the time, or someone who's afraid of mice. Okay? Though you can be afraid of mice as well. No, a real woman is someone who can put forward the close men in her life, cheerfully and with joy to promote him, to empower your mutual mission, and to give him rest. That's a woman, according to the scriptures. And you know what, you young women who are here? You can do that. You can learn to do that. You can. Whether or not you feel like you fit in with other women or not. And in so doing, in so answering that call, you find out what it is, what real womanliness is. That's what the Bible gives us. Now, if you don't like these definitions, or some definition like this, I would say gender has already slipped through your fingers. You've already kind of lost the image of God in the way that he talks. You know, there I was giving a sermon like this in my church at one point, and right after the sermon, a young man approached me, came up to the front. Let's call him Dan. And Dan says to me, you know, Pastor, I don't like all this talk about, you know, my masculinity in terms of women. I don't like us kind of getting it caught up in all this woman stuff. What I want to know is how to be a man at work. How am I masculine at my job? That's what I want to know. And I looked at him, I said, Dan, actually, what you're doing at your job has little to do with you as a man. It has little to do with your masculinity. Now, you might bring some sex-differentiated traits to that job, but honestly, it doesn't really have a lot to do with you being a man, because being a man is about having women around that you sacrifice for. And usually, at work, the relationships don't get close enough so that gender kicks in like that. At least they're not supposed to get close enough. You know, in workplace, they're not supposed to get that close. Maybe they do. But I said, usually it's not the case. That's not actually about what your manhood is. And, you know, he didn't like that answer. But it was very interesting. It was right after Dan came up, a young woman came up in the congregation to talk to me about the sermon. We'll call her Danielle. Okay. Danielle comes up to me, and she says, listen, I've existed and thrived and prospered as a young single woman on my own without the help of men, thank you very much, for a long time now. This was in New York City, by the way, and this woman was an independent, single, living woman, and actually very competent. It was, what she was saying is true. But she's saying, I've existed quite well without men, thank you very much. So where do you get off? I mean, she was nice about it. Didn't come across about it. But the essence was, where do you get off telling me that I need men to understand my womanliness? And I said to her, Danielle, it's easy for me to answer you because I've just had this last question. I can filter it through Dan's question. What do you think of him saying he really doesn't need men in his, he doesn't need women in his life to understand how to be a man, what a man is? What do you think of that? Do you think he's ever going to get the courage, overcome the obstacle enough to ask you out or ask someone out, you know? Or talk to Danielle, talk to both of them. In other words, you say that you don't really need a woman to understand your manhood. You say you don't really need men to understand your womanhood. What do you think your relationships are going to be like? No, because in the Lord, woman is not without man. Man is not without woman. That's what we're being told. Now, one more verse, right? Verse 12. Verse 12 is very important because verse 12 tells us why God feels so passionately about this. Why God cares about gender, this thing called gender, and being masculine or being feminine. Why does God care so much about it? And the answer is right here in verse 12. It's because this whole, if I could call it, gender minimization project or gender blending that's been going on for decades now in our culture, it silences the message that God once proclaimed from every street corner, because it's a message about who he is. Gender is a gift that's been given us to talk about who God is. And so you see what Paul says in verse 12. He says, for man was born of woman, as woman was made from man, so man is now born of woman. In other words, Paul is taking us back to the very primordial foundation of our humanity. Right? He's taking us back to the very beginning, isn't he? He's taking us back to Genesis chapter 1, Genesis chapter 2, where God says, I'm going to make something in my own image. And then what does he do? He makes them male and female. So what Paul says is that both of them, all things, in other words, both masculine and feminine, both men and women, are from God. Both genders come out of God. That's what he's saying in verse 12, is he not? Both genders come out of God. That's what it means to be made in his image. So he made us gendered to have relationships. And in those relationships, we see God. That's why he's given us relationships, because what's happening is we're seeing an image of the triune community of God. God gave us gender to have relationships so that we can see our relationships. It reflects who God is themself, because God is not just one person. This is not Judaism. This is not Islam. This is Christianity. God is three persons, one God. And he has a community of love within himself, within these different persons. That's why we're made male and female. That's why we're given gender. And when we minimize that gender, we are actually silencing the image of God that he once proclaimed. So the only thing that we can be left with, friends, is how much of a great gift this is that we've been given. We shouldn't want to silence it. We should want to find the way out of our gender dysphoria so that we can know the love of God. He's given us this so that we can explore what it means, to, what's actually going on between the first and second member of the triune God, that community. It's a gift that we've been given so that we can be godlike. So if Paul is right, then coloring outside of these lines is not going to make us more human. It's going to make us less human. It's going to subtract from us. And it's not going to enliven us. It's not going to motivate us to be who we should be. That's not going to make us what God wants us to be in this world. And, you know, I find that to be true. You know? I give you a great example. I was looking at your bulletin here and noticed you have a youth group. Who's the head of the youth group here? See here? Okay. I saw your name in the bulletin. Okay, so let me talk to you. You understand, right, that the point of youth groups is to go on a youth retreat, right? That's what youth ministry is about, right? Because that's what the youth really want to do. They want to go on a youth retreat, right? I know that. I've got a lot of experience with youth ministry. But usually, you know, a church isn't large enough to have its own youth retreat, so you join forces with other churches and you all go on a youth retreat, and that makes it work, right? You go skiing or whatever, and so you fulfill the point of youth ministry. Well, we went on one of these youth retreats recently, our church, with these other churches. Of course, as soon as you get involved with other churches, you don't know what you're getting, right? Who knows who's going to be there, right? Plus, youth retreats are the time to invite your friends, right? All of your friends from school. Say, they're really cool. We're having this cool church retreat, so come. So you don't know what you're going to get this youth retreat. Well, we had our youth retreat, and we had a group of young teenage girls who were sitting at this one table. And these guys from who knows where, you know, that come over and start flirting with them. And I mean really flirting. I mean not just flirting, but starting to say very inappropriate things to these guys. And of course, our girls, they didn't know how to deal with this. And it was like, oh, you know, giggling. And, oh, what? They didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to deal with it. They're in a very uncomfortable situation. Maybe they were starting to warm up to it, which would be worse. But these guys were doing this. What happened? Well, there was another member of the youth group, a guy in our youth group. He saw what was going on, and he went over and very graciously said, you know, we need to talk about something with our youth group over here, so we need to actually move over to here. We need to go over there. And he's kind of ushered them out of that situation into a better place. Now, what was that? That was a man being a man. Because he understood these things and had kind of captured this and said, what my manhood is about is taking steps forward to be responsible for women in my life, for close women in my life. And that's what he was doing. That's being a man. And that's what I'm so happy when I see. When we accept God's lines of gender, when we answer this call of gender, it quickens us. It enlivens me, and it takes me out of the usual lethargy and selfishness in which I live. It calls me out of that, and I start to grow up. And it changes men's reaction. If men actually grab hold of this and grasp their calling as a man, it actually motivates them. It changes the way they relate to women. It changes the way they relate to pornography. Listen, you want to curb pornography? You want to curb sexual abuse, actual sexual abuse in our culture? Give men their manhood back. Now, it sounds counterintuitive, but it's actually the way that it works. Give men a sense that, give them the understanding of their call as manhood, and it changes the way they respond to women, the way they think of women. I got to bring us to a close here, but, you know, As Darren mentioned, did you mention we were having the Q&A? Okay, well, what we decided was, you know, I'm raising a lot of issues here, a lot of questions in your mind. That's good. We can't address all of them in the sermon, but what we're going to do is have, in the Sunday school area, a Q&A after this. So if you have questions in your mind, please, 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 come right after the service. It's immediately after. Is that right? Right after the service, we're going to go over to the Sunday school. If you have further questions, you want to talk about this, we'd be happy to take those questions and talk some more about it. Because I realize raising a lot of snakes here, I can't shoot them all. So if you have questions, don't bring them. What? It's just a figure of speech. If you have snakes, come next door and ask questions. So we'd love to talk about it further. But I'll just say, let me just say, you want to stop women from cutting themselves? You want to stop women from starving themselves to death? Give them their womanliness. Listen, when a woman grasps hold of her call as divine empowerer, it changes her inner emotional life. It does. So the scripture is calling us to get made over by Christ, to color inside these lines. You want to feel alive? You want to be quickened? Own the gift that has been given to usher you into God's love themselves and explore the mystery of God's own self. Amen.